Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Erechin Daf Chof Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins from the very top of Daf Chof Gimel, where you see a Mishnah. Hamakdish Nechosov, a person dedicates his property, his holdings, to the Beis HaMikdash. What kind of person are we talking about? V'hoisolok subas isha. We're talking about a person who was a married man, and as such, his wife has due to her, in the event that he divorces her, a ksuba payment. This is a financial security arrangement that married women are guaranteed by their husbands upon marriage. That is, that in the event of a divorce or death, they get a lump sum payment that we refer to as a ksuba. Rebbe Lozer Omer, kishiyagarshena, this man who happened to be married at a point when he sanctified or dedicated his property to the Beis HaMikdash, in the event that he divorces her, at which point she would have a claim on those properties that he had dedicated, Yodur Hano, the man is to swear that he will not benefit from her ever again, which basically means this nether that he takes will prevent him from ever remarrying her. What is the reason for this? So Rashi at the top says, Yodur Hano, Yodur, it means to vow, Shelo Yachziran Lolam, that he will not take her back ever as a wife. The Shemo Mishum Aromo Megarish Lo, the fear is that he divorced her in a trickery fashion. What's the trickery here? Shetigvek Subasa Min HaHegdish, that she should lay claim to the properties that he was makdish. After all, her claim to those properties really preempted the holding of the Beis HaMikdash on it, so she would have a right to collect those properties. But our fear is that his plan to divorce her was only that she should extricate those properties from the Beis HaMikdash holding, the Yachzirenu, and then he would take her back, so as to ensure ourselves that he is not engaged in foul play, in other words, a divorce as a means of getting the properties away from Hegdish. We tell him that if you divorce her, then you have to vow that you won't take her back. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Eino Tzorech. Rabbi Yeshua disagrees and says that there is no vow that is taken. The Gemara will elaborate on Rabbi Yeshua's opinion later. Kayotze Bedovar, similarly, Omer Rav Shimon Gamliel, Af Heorev Liisha Biksubasa, Vahoya Baila Megarsha. An Orev is a guarantor. If there had been someone that guaranteed to the woman that she would get her ksuba in the event that her husband wouldn't come through, and you have a man now divorcing his wife, and the wife turns to the Orev, to the guarantor, for her money, we say, Yadireno Hano, that this husband who is now divorcing her should swear that he won't take her back. Shemoyase Kenunya al Nechosim Shelze Viyachsir Es Ishta. We are fearful that the divorce was simply a means of her claiming the property, the holdings of the Orev, as payment for her ksuba. The husband then would take her back, and they would enjoy together a life of mutual existence, benefiting from the Orev's guarantor's property that the woman collected. So as to preempt this from happening. We tell the husband that, okay, if you divorce your wife and she turns to the orev for the collection of her ksuba, let it be known you will not be able to take her back. B'mai komiflagi. Before we go further in the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading, and mivne, structural note, that appear as one note on the side of our Gemara, the outside margin, in the Shas Ozer, which is the Shas, the Gemara that appears on your screen. This is a special feature of our Shas Ozer, topic headings and structural notes as needed. In this case, we have on the outside margin diamonds that will appear in this sugya, and they're numbered 1 through 4. And we explain Dorochim Shainim, different approaches or different ways, Lahazbir Machlokes HaTanoim B'Mishnah, to explain the Tanaic controversy that we see in our Mishnah, B'mi Shehikdish Es Nechosov, regarding someone who had sanctified his properties, V'hoya Olov Ksubas Isha. And this man who sanctified his properties, he had a Ksuba obligation that was upon them. So our Gemara asks, B'mai komiflugi, what's the point of controversy between Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Yeshua? Rebbe Elazar sovar, Odom oisa kinunyo al hahegdish. We suspect that a person will practice foul play even with regard to the property held by the Beis HaMikdash. And that's reflected in Rebbe Elazar's opinion that says that when he divorces her, he has to swear that he won't take her back. Rebbe Yeshua sovar, Ein Odom oisa kinunyo al hahegdish. Rabbi Yeshua, who says there's no need to swear that he, because we are not fearful that a person would do this kinunya, an act of trickery, in order to, namely, divorce his wife simply to get properties away from the Beis Hamikdash, properties that he had dedicated to get them away. The Gemara asks, Velaha diyomar Rav Huna. Shchiv meira shehikdish kol nechosov, a person who is deathly ill, that sanctified all of his properties. V'yamar mona leponi biyodi, and this shchiv meira, this person who's deathly ill, says that there's a 100 mona, represents an amount of money, mona leponi biyodi. In other words, I owe so and so a mona. Ne'emon, this deathly ill person is believed. Chazaka ein oisa kinunya al hektish. So we have here Rav Huna, who spoke about a shchiv meira, a person who was deathly ill that had sanctified his properties, and he declares that a mona, $100, $100 whatever, is due to so and so. We believe him, and so and so will get paid from these properties. Chazoka, there is an assumption that ein odom oisik nehekdish, a person would not practice foul play when it comes to things that were sanctified. So that if he says that money was owed, now this is money prior to his having sanctified his property, that money was owed to so and so, we believe him. So now that's a statement made by Rav Huna. Lema kitanoi omra lishmaitse. Should we say that Rav Huna, who says this point that ein odom oisa kinunya lahegdish, is really saying something that's based on a Tanaic controversy, and it's not something that would enjoy unanimous opinion, unanimity. Simply stated, Rav Huna, who says that a person who is makdish is nechosim, is not suspect of making a Knunyan HaHegdish, would agree then only with Rabbi Yeshua, according to the way we set things up. The Gemara says, Loi, we don't have to say that Rav Huna here is an opinion that's part of a Tanaic controversy. Ad kan lo pligi el babori. The Machlokes Tanoim that we saw above between Rabbi Elazar and Yeshua was in reference to a healthy individual. And there the issue was, would a healthy individual try to practice foul play in getting properties away from the Beis HaMikdash? Aval b'shchiv meira, which is the topic Rav Huna spoke about, divrei hakol ein odom oisa kinunya al hekdash. Everyone, all the Tanayim will agree, even Rebbe Elazar will agree, that when you're dealing with a shchiv meira, a person who's deathly ill, that he is not interested in practicing foul play. My taima, why do you say that? Answer, ein odom chote velo lo. A person wouldn't sin unless he himself stands to benefit. Here we're talking about a person who's deathly ill. He's not going to be around to benefit from the properties that he was extricating from the base Hamikdash holding, if that's what his design was. So since he knows he's deathly ill, and nevertheless he says that mona leploni, that so-and-so has a mona coming to him, we believe him. And we don't suspect that he was making these claims only so as to get property away from the Beis Hamikdash. Iko di Amri. This squiggle underline represents an alternative approach to this sukya. Bebori de kuli alma lo pligi, adam oise kinunya al hegdish. This is another extreme. We'll say that when it comes to a bori, a healthy person, everyone agrees that a person is suspect of practicing foul play with regard to the of properties dedicated to the Beis Hamikdash. The Hocha, and with regard to our Machlokes Tanoim in the Mishnah, is Beneder Hu Shehuder Barabim Komiflegi. This is with regard to the strength of a vow that was taken in public. Mor Sovar Yesh Lo Hafora. Rabbi Yeshua, who said in our Mishnah there's no need to swear, that's a function of his holding, it won't help. Even if the guy swears, and even though it's a neder that was huda barabim, nevertheless, it can be rescinded. That's yesh lo hafora. So that the fact that he takes a neder isn't going to have any major effect, and therefore there's no need, there's no purpose in his taking such an eder. Umor savar ein loy hafora. Rabbi Lozar, who says that she should take a vow, so she'll take this vow in public, and we will know that it cannot be rescinded. And therefore, knowing that he took this vow, we then understand that he's not engaged in mere foul play to get property away from the Beis Hamikdash and then to benefit from it later, because he won't. The Iboy Sema, the Kule Amo, Neder Shehuda Barabim Yesh Lo Hafora. According to this approach, everyone will agree that a neder taken publicly can be undone. The Hocha, Beneder Shehuda Aldas Rabim Komifiki. Here, the issue is a net concerning the strength of a neder that was instructed publicly. In other words, he was instructed by the public to swear. That's aldas rabin. A neder or a vow that he was expected to take. The Gemara asks, if that's the point of controversy, then velaha diomar ameimar neder shuhudar per rabim yesh lo hafora. Aldas rabim ein lo hafora. Amemar tells us there are two types of nedarim. One is a neder that's taken in public, and the other one is a neder done with the knowledge or the instruction at the request of the public. And that, according to Amemar, has no undoing. Now, if according to our third approach, this third Roman number 3, the Iboy Seima, we're saying that very point is a machlokes tanoim, a neder shuda al das rabim. So lema kitanoi omro l'shmaitse, should we say that which a meimar says is a machlokes tanoim, that not every tana agrees with that? That's not a very good position for a meimar to be in. Vesu, and furthermore, according to the approach that we're taking in the Gemara, is that according to Rabbi Eliezer, such a vow is effective. According to Rabbi Yeshua, such a vow is not effective. In other words, we're saying that it can be undone. Well, if that's the case, and since it can be undone, so there's no point in taking such a vow in the first place, because it can be undone. Well, we are now going to ask as far as the language of the Mishnah is concerned, Vesu Rabbi Yeshua Omer Eino Tzorach. That's what Rabbi Yeshua's reaction was to the Tanakama, who spoke about her vowing. So he says Eino Tzorach. Well, according to the way we're explaining things, it's not simply to say Eino Tzorach, rather Eino Mo'il Mi Boyalei. Rabbi Yeshua should have said that that the neder that's done al das rabim is not effective. In other words, it can be undone. Ela, a fourth stage of analyzing the controversy in the Mishnah. Ela hocha b'she'ela dehegdish called mifli. The word she'ela means, in this context, the approach to a sage who would undo a vow. And when we speak about a person dedicating things to hegdish, that's in effect a type of vow where he sanctifies his properties or dedicates his properties to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the issue here concerns, can a vow to the Beis HaMikdash, can a Beis HaMikdash dedication be undone? The HaTanya, this is a support source and on a minority of occasions where the word Vahatanya appears, it's not a question, but it is in fact a support. So we want to say that we're going to now bring a Tanaic source in which Rabbi Elazar and Yeshua appear, pointing out that their point of controversy it regards can the act of hektish be undone, the act of one sanctifying property to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, before we go further in the Gemara itself, let's just glance at the Rashi in the upper part of the page. B'she'ela dehegdish pligi. Rabbi Elazar Savar. Rabbi Elazar, who was the first opinion in our Mishnah, would hold Ein nish'olin al hegdish l'chocham, that one can't approach a chocham regarding the undoing of a hegdish. V'afilu omer lo l'chocham lo l'das ki nadarti v'hegdish tosu. And even if a person claims, listen, I didn't dedicate my properties under such and such circumstances, and therefore it was all a mistake. Afilu hachi ein chocham matir nidro. A wise man cannot undo such a vow, a hektish vow. Hilkoch zeha megarish es ishto behekdesho mischoret v'eino motzei chocham shiati renu. V'lochein oise kinunya zu. According to Rabbi Elazar, this person who is divorcing his wife, his interest is in getting the properties away from Hektish. She'll collect her ksuba, and then he'll remarry her. We're suspicious of foul play. And why are we suspicious of foul play? Because there is no other way to undo the Hektish that he did. So Rabbi Elazar is of the opinion that Hektish cannot be undone through a she'elas chacham. And therefore, the only way, the only option for this guy to get his property back out of Hegdish would be for his wife to collect it. And therefore, since we're worried about foul play, that he's interested in his wife collecting the property and thereby getting it out of Hegdish, so he'll divorce her and then take her back later and enjoy the property. That's why Rabbi Elazar says in the Mishnah, he says, when he divorces her, he must vow not to take her back. Continuing in Rashi, Rabbi Yeshua Sovar, Nish'olin al Hektish. A person who dedicated something and is really interested in getting it back, he can undo his Hektish vow by approaching a Chochem, a wise man who understands the rules of abrogating or of neutralizing vows. And as far as our case here is concerned, through the eyes of Rabbi Yeshua, there's no need to vow regarding not taking her back. The Mishum Kenunya, Rashi says, if one is suspect that he's divorcing her only to get the funds away from Hektish, have Ovid, have a Mitchell al Nidre, Velo Boy Lagashu. He had another approach without having to come to divorce her. He should have simply asked the Chocham to undo his neder to the Hektish. So So from the fact that Rabbi Yeshua says that there is no need for the neder, it's because if this person was really interested in getting the properties away from the Beis HaMikdash, he wouldn't have to do something of this odd nature. He would simply be shoyel al the hekdash. And now we see this in the source, V'hotanya, support to our point that was made, that the machlokis between Reb Lezer and Yeshua concerns she'elov the hekdash, the ability to approach a chacham, a sage, in order to have the hekdash undone. Hamakdish nechosav v'hoisolov ksubas isha. Reb Lezer Omer, kishu megarsha yodur hana. Reb Lezer says that one who had sanctified his properties and then divorces his wife, he has to swear that he won't take her back. Reb Yeshua Omer, eino tzorach, that he doesn't have to swear, because if the person is really set on getting his property away from the Beis HaMikdash, so he would have simply been able to be shoyel on it. The machlokas between Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Yeshua parallels this earlier machlokas tanoi between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. She Beis Shammai omrim hekdish tois hekdish, that someone who has makdish something even with mistaken assumption, his hekdish is binding and it cannot be undone. Beis Hillel omrim hekdish tos, eino hekdish. Hekdish that was done by mistake, so it's not binding. Now, let us take a look at the Rashi to see the tie-in of these points. Hekdish tos, hekdish. That was the approach that was taken by Beis Shammai, and by saying that even if it's done by mistake, it sticks, this is a result of the Ein She'ela LeHekdish. There is no undoing of Hekdish. And who did we hear to say Ein She'ela BeHekdish? That was according to Rabbi Eliezer, so that Rabbi Eliezer will parallel Beis Shammai. Well, Beis Hillel Omrim, Hekdish Tos, Eino Hekdish. Hekdish that was done under mistaken circumstances isn't binding. It doesn't take hold. This opinion will therefore hold that hekdish in general, one could undo it through she'ela. V'chein hoya rabon Shimon ben Gamliel omer. If we glance back at the Mishnah, we'll notice on the third, fourth line from the top of the Omid, Rabbi Yeshua, but Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said, an orev of an isha, b'ksubasa, v'hoya baila megarsha, a person whose wife had a ksuba payment due to her, and she, for whatever reason, the husband isn't able to pay it up, so she goes to the guarantor. In such a case where a woman is going to collect her ksuba payment from a guarantor, we say the baal, the husband, has to swear not to take her back. That's yidirena hano, shemo yaskinya al nechosim shelzev, the achzer es ishto. We are fearful of his divorcing her only to be able to get this other guy's, the guarantor's, properties. Now, as we turn to the Gemara at the very end of the first wide line, we see in the space to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text a word written in Maisa with a circle around it and a long vertical dashed line, indicating that all of the lines of the Gemara opposite this marking constitute or are relevant to this Maisa. So the Gemara reports a story, and we will later see the tie-in of all the points. Moshe bar Atzri, this is a man's name, Arva de Kalse Have. This Moshe bar Atzri was a guarantor of his daughter-in-law's ksuba. In other words, this person's son married a woman. So that the father, Moshe bar Atzri, in effect, is serving as a guarantor for his son's ksuba, the money that he will owe to this woman. So we said that Moshe Ba'atzri was the Arva de Kalseh Have, Rav Huna Brei, and Rav Huna, the son of Moshe Ba'atzri, Tzur Rabbanan Have. He was a young Talmud Chacham. Udechika Le Milsa, and he was a man of little means. Omar Abaye, so Abaye says, Leko de Nasvi Eitzel Rav Huna. Is there no one here that could give a little word of advice to Rav Huna? Deligrish litvisu, let him divorce his wife. V'tisba ksubasa me'avua, and she'll then seek out her ksuba from her father-in-law. V'lihadra Mihatri, and then he'll take her back. And then Rav Huna will be able to take her back. We can say, just technically speaking, when the more at the beginning line says, V'titba ksubasa me'avua, that means that her ksuba payment will be collected from the husband's father. And after that, after the woman collects her ksuba, he, the Rav Huna, then can remarry her. And they'll have now more money available. Amalei Rava, v'ho anan yodur hano atnan. Rava says to Abai, how can you even raise this suggestion that Rav Huna, who was a impoverished man, through divorcing his wife and subsequent collection from his father of the ksuba, and then their remarriage, would be a solution? How can that solution ever come to be when we have taught that a person who's divorcing his wife and she is going to get her collection from an orev, that the husband has to swear not to take her back? How then is this considered an etza, a piece of advice for Rav Huna to come into money? V'Abaye, now Abaye's response, he says, Otu kol de megarish v'beidino megarish. Do you think that everyone that divorces does so in front of a court? In other words, people do things also outside the court. The fellow would divorce her, hand her a get outside of court, and since they're doing things on their own, no one's going to raise the need for the husband to make this vow. So he'll divorce her, she'll approach his father for her ksuba money, and they will remarry. And that's why Abaye says, my etzo could have been suggested. And they would be able to get married, because they're not getting divorced in front of a beis din that knows all of these details in halachas about, yes, the need to swear. Lesof igloi milso de koyin havi. It turned out, though, the end of the story, that Rav Huna, he was the son-in-law, or the son of Moshe ben Atzi, who needed the money, that he was a kohen. And as a kohen, had he actually divorced her, he wouldn't have been able to take her back, because a kohen is not allowed to marry a grusha, even if it's the woman that he himself divorced. So, at the end of the day, the divorce and subsequent ksuba collection never took place. Omar Abaye, Boser Anya, Azla and Yusuf. Based on this, you see that one who is a poor man, poverty follows him. Poverty follows the poor man. And in this case, Rav Huna, who was poor, had no option, we'll say, in collecting enabling his wife to collect her ksuba. The Gemara asks on Abaye's etza over here. Umi Omar Abaye Hochi, is it possible that Abaye gave such advice that recommended that Rav Huna divorce his wife and thereby enabling her to collect from the orev, and then he would remarry her? Would Abaye have said such a thing, recommended such a procedure, such an approach? V'omer Abaye, Abaye has been known to say, in a different Masechta, Ezu Rosh Arum, who is considered a devious, evil man. Zehamasi Eitza Limkor Binachosim Kerab Shimon Ben Gamliel. This is someone who gives advice to someone to sell property in accordance with Rav Shimon Ben Gamliel. Now, here we just need a little bit of background. If a person was dying and he instructed that he wants his properties to go to Mr. A, and after Mr. A, when Mr. A dies, the properties should then go to Mr. B. What if while Mr. A is holding on to those properties, namely he's still alive and enjoying the properties that were assigned to him, let us say he were then to sell them, the properties, to someone else. Would that sale take hold? After all, the original giver of the property said, I want it to go after Mr. 1 to go to Mr. 2. During the time it's in the domain or in the possession of Mr. 1, would one be able to sell it? So according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, he says, yeah, Mr. 1 would be able to sell the properties, and 2 will benefit only from whatever remains in the possession of Mr. 1. So what we just described is a person who advises, let's say, Mr. 1 to sell off his properties and at least get something from them. That type of Eitza is considered a Rasha Arum. So how is it that Abaye is giving an Eitza of a similar devious nature, that Rav Huna should divorce his wife in order for her to get the money and then they will remarry? So the Gemara answers, Bray Shiny Vitzubur Merabonan Shiny. The idea here of the woman collecting her ksuba from the father of her husband, that wouldn't be considered a type of, let's say, fixing him, conniving, some type of conniving act, because a son is different. The father is only too happy to pay the money to his daughter-in-law, money from which his son eventually will benefit. And another point here is that this, you're dealing with a Tzur Rabbonan, a young Talmud Chacham who is going to be the beneficiary. So that this wouldn't fall under the same heading as what Abaye described as a Rosh Ha'orum. The Gemara asks, V'tepuk lei da'orev d'ksuba lo mishtabed. Why not explain that there's no problem of Rosh Ha'orum over here? Very simply because the Orev, the guarantor of a ksuba, in this case, the father of Moshe ben Atsi was the father of Rav Huna. This father isn't obligated to pay the ksuba anyway. So that's why there's no problem here of a Rosh Ha'orum. So, once again, why not just learn out that here there's no money that's really going to be paid, because you're dealing with someone who's an Orev, a guarantor of a ksuba, and we say that one who's a guarantor of a ksuba is not really bound to pay off the ksuba. So the Gemara answers, well, Kablon Havei. He was a type of guarantor known as a kablon, and as such he does bear full responsibility, and therefore the only reason that we're saying that he's not considered a Rosh Ha'orum is because the beneficiary of this is going to be a Tzur B'Rabbanan, or because you're dealing with the kablon's own son. Just a word about what a kablon is. So we look at Rashi at the top. Kablon havei shehitfisa Rav Huna metalti l'ksubasa. Rav Huna, who when he married his wife, he gave her portables that were of value that would be designated for her ksuba. V'hi hishlimoso la'oviv. And she gave those metaltalin to his father. So he received the value of her ksuba, and as such, he's called a kablon. Vainu kablon shenose v'nosein biyad. So, in exchange for these metaltalin that he received, he in turn guarantees payment of her ksuba. So, what did we say? We just said that this claim that an orev of a ksuba is not bound, and therefore there really is no rosha orum shaila over here. We're talking about someone who is bound. He's called a kablon. And therefore, the only reason that Abaye could give such an eitzah that the son should divorce his wife and thereby she collects money from the guarantor, that is a possibility because this guarantor really is chayev to pay. Well, honi cholamando mar kablon afagav de les le nechosim le loyve mishtabet. This idea that a kablon becomes bound will work out according to the Mandomer that says that a kablon, even in the event that the one who's borrowing money in a loan situation, a guarantor of such a loan, a kablon guarantor of such a loan, becomes bound even in the event that the borrower does not have any money. So we understand that the kablon is bound. Now, how does that apply to our Gemara? So in our Gemara, we also saw someone that had no money, namely Rav Huna. Does his father become bound? So we say, well, there is an opinion that says that even in the event that the lova, that a borrower or the person that needs the money doesn't himself have any property, nevertheless, a lien is formed on the kablon's holdings. But according to the opinion, it says even a kablon will become bound to pay off a debt only in the event that the borrower has property. If the borrower has no property, like is in our case where Rav Huna didn't have any property, so then the kablon, the guarantor of the ksuba himself, isn't bound. So if that be the case, that he's not really bound, then that's the reason then that we don't have a Russia Orum situation. And you don't have to come on to the Hesber that, well, you're dealing with his son, or it's a Tzobar Rabbonon. The question then is, why is it that we had to answer, in order to explain how we're not dealing with an Russia Orum, why did we have to explain that, well, he's dealing with his son, or a Tzobar Rabbonon, when he himself wasn't ever really bound? So the Gemara answers, Iboy Yaseima Rav Huna Havele Vishtaduf. Rav Huna, who was the, really did have properties at the time of his marriage. It's just that they went bad. They went bad later on. So as a result of this, the kablon, the guarantor, really is bound. The Iboy Yaseima Abo Legabe Brei Shabda Mishabe Nafshe. A father, when you're dealing with his son, and the father is the guarantor of money that his son would need, the father is mishabed himself. He commits himself. So that there would have been a Rosha Orum problem, if not for the fact that you're dealing with a son, as we answered, or you're dealing with a Tzur Bum Rabbonan. But in all of this approach of the Gemara, we were trying to show how father, Moshe ben Atzi, really is bound. And now the Gemara goes over these different types of guarantors and with regard to two different topics of Ksuba and Baal Chov. The Itmar, we'll see there are four categories. Orev, the Ksuba, Divrei HaKol, Lo Mishtabed. a person who is guaranteeing a ksuba, everyone agrees, he doesn't really become bound. The orev is not bound to pay off the ksuba. There's a Rashi here, Orev Iksuba Divrei HaKol Lo Mishtabe, the mitzvah ka'ovid lezavgam. He is performing a mitzvah in getting these two people to marry one another. In other words, by saying, I will guarantee the ksuba, so the girl, the woman, is willing to marry the husband. V'lo midi mechasulo. And furthermore, the woman who is going to be the beneficiary of the money, of the guarantee, she isn't laying out any funds. It's not like a malve in general who loans out money that he has a guarantor to whom he can turn, and the guarantor becomes bound. That's because the guarantor realizes that someone laid out money. But here, she didn't lay out any money. Deha lo yahiva zuzi. She didn't pay any money. She's not really like a malveh. So as a result of this, the orev of Iksuba doesn't really bind himself, realizing that the person who he's trying to help didn't themselves lay out any money. So that's as far as an orev of Iksuba, everyone agrees, is not really bound. Kablon de Malchov, Divrei HaKol Mishtabe. The Rabbeinu Gershom explains that a kablon of a Balchov is you're dealing with a lender and borrower of money. The kablon in such a case is the guarantor who says to the malveh, he says, I want you to extend a loan to so-and-so, to a loveh, and I will guarantee it. And since he is saying, you give the money to the loveh, it's as if, says the Rabbeinu Gershom, as if he, the kablon, received the money from the malveh and then gave it to the loveh, so that the like we explained before with the kablon of the ksuba, where the kablon received the money, that in that case we saw in the Rashi that Rav Huna had given her money or metaltalin for her ksuba, and then she gave it to the kablon. So here there is in a sense a situation where the money was handed over to him. So Divrei HaKol Mishtabe, the kablon of a chov, this is the man who said, I want you, Mr. Malva, to give so-and-so a loan. He really is bound. Orev de Baal Chov, the Kablon de Ksuba, two more cases, someone who is a mere guarantor of a loan, and a Kablon by the Ksuba, Pligi. This will be a point of controversy. Iko Lamanda Omar, Is Le Nichsi Lelove Mishtabed, Les Le Lo Mishtabed. According to one, this, the first opinion is that only in the event that the borrower has property will he bind himself, and otherwise he won't. Ve'ika lamanda omar, there is another opinion, says afagav de lesle mishtabed, even in the event that the borrower doesn't have any properties, the guarantor nevertheless does become bound to pay off the loan. Ve'hilchasa bekulhu, afagav de les le nami mishtabed. And the Gemara rules that in all of these cases, even in the event that the, whether it be the husband to be or the borrower, has no property, these guarantors are going to bind themselves. Labar me orev de ksuba, with the exception of a guarantor of a ksuba payment, the afagav de is le loy mishtabe, even in the event that the husband has property, he won't bind himself. My taima, why is he not considered? Why is the orev not considered bound? Mitzvah ka'avid velo midi chosra. His whole intention is to do a mitzvah. The mitzvah being to create a new couple in marriage, and at the same time, the one who is the beneficiary of the guarantee, namely the woman, she never laid out any money. So she never laid out money. Therefore, the guarantor doesn't feel a real true sense of obligation to come to their defense, which is different than the case of a malveh who laid out money. Hahu gavra dizavninhu l'nichsei. There was a man that sold his properties to a buyer, the kogarsha litvisu, and then he divorced this man who sold off his properties, then divorced his wife. Now, where is she going to turn to get her ksuba payment? It would seem that she's going to turn to the ones that purchased property from this man. Shochar of Yosef brei de Rava, the kameder of Papa. So this question involving the woman, and does she, how's she going to get her ksuba payment when her husband in the meantime had sold off his properties? So the case was sent to Rav Papa. Rav Yosef sends a question. Orev Tnan. Hektish Tnan. When you're dealing with an Orev, a guarantor of a ksuba, so we had the Mishnah that taught about that. And the Mishnah told us that because of a chashash knunya, chashash of underhandedness, the husband has to swear not to take her back if we're talking about a woman who's going to collect her ksuba. With regard to Hekdish, we also were taught about that in the Mishnah. That a woman who is going to collect property from Hekdish, so the husband won't be able to take her back. We're suspicious of foul play. So those cases are clear. Lokeach mahu. What is the din with regard to purchases of property who purchased from a man who now divorced his wife and she's going to come to collect her ksuba? Does she go to them? Rashi, in the upper part of the page, Lokeach mahu, mi chayshinun likinunya, are we choshesh for some underhandedness here? Shela'achar shetitrov zu karka min alokeach, after she collects her ksuba from the purchaser, Yachzirena. He, the husband, will then remarry her via Dur Hanon. As a result of that, we should insist on a vow taken, made, that he won't remarry her. Omar Lay. So Rav Papa answers, Tana ki ruchla nechishiv v'nezel. Do you think that the Tana is like a merchant that displays all of his wares? In other words, just like in the case of Orev and Hektish, we are suspicious of foul play, or we anticipate the possibility of foul play, and therefore he has to swear not to remarry her. The same thing in the case of the Lokeach. The husband shall swear that he won't take her back. And with that, we ensure ourselves that when he does divorce her, he's not divorcing her with an intent of simply getting the ksuba from the purchaser and then his remarrying her, and they're mutually benefiting from those funds. That's the approach that we labeled number one. Number two, Nahardoi Amri, Disnan Tnan, the Lo Tnan, Lo Tnan. Where it's taught that he has to swear not to take her back, so it's there it's taught. Where it's not taught, for example, in the case of the Lokeach, so there is no need for him to swear not to take her back. Amar of Misharshia, my time of the Nardoi, what's the reasoning behind Nardoi who makes a distinction between a woman turning to Hegdish or to an Orev versus her turning to a purchaser? The Gemara answers, Bishlamo Hektish, I understand in that case, Mishum Revach the Hektish, because we're interested in protecting the holdings, the profits and holdings of Hektish. Therefore, in our interest in protecting and defending Hektish, we say that if you are divorcing your wife and you're serious about the divorce and not just trying to get her to get property out of Hektish, so vow not to take her back. Orev Nami, In the case of the Orev, also, mitzvah hu de'ovad velo velav midi chosra. Here we'll just glance at the Rabbeinu Gershom, who says, Orev nami mishum mitzvah ovad shezivgon. The Orev was motivated to fulfill a mitzvah by creating a couple in marriage. Mishum hochi niskokin lahadira. Therefore, we want to get involved to impose a vow on the husband not to remarry her. Shaloihe odem nimna milasos mitzvah. So as to protect the orev, that it shouldn't be that the husband is divorcing his wife simply for her to get payment from the guarantor. We want to encourage this guarantor to continue in his efforts to match up couples. And if that means he has to guarantee their ksubas, so be it. And with this, we protect him from any foul play. With this, meaning the vow that we insist on the husband taking, not to take her back. Ella, lokeach, but as far as a purchaser, are we interested, are we sufficiently motivated to defend the purchaser? Michti, meida yoda dechochad v'chad iko leiksuba. It's well known that a married person carries upon himself a ksuba responsibility. Amai nasal venizman. Why do people go and buy properties from such people? Now, if they do, if they buy properties, they realize they're buying properties which carry upon them a prior ksuba obligation. So, Iuhu the Afsid Anafshe, he caused his own loss, so to speak, by buying these properties from a married man. Hamakdish Nechosov Vahoisa Olov Ksubas Isha Ubal Choiv. A person who sanctified his properties, dedicated them to the Beis HaMikdash, however, prior to that, he had divorced his wife. In other words, prior to that, he had a ksuba obligation, or he had a loan to be paid off. In such a case, the feeling is, or the approach here is that he really had no right to makdish these nechosim when the nechosim were already earmarked for the ksuba payment that he had already incurred, or the loan that he had already taken out. So here there's no, you're not dealing with an issue of a knunia, where Hekdish had a claim to the properties and we want to try to protect Hekdish. So in such a case, Ein ho'isha yecholu ligvois ksubosim in a Hekdish, v'ol balchov eschovo, elo ha'poide poide amanas litein, li'isha b'ksubosu balchov eschovo. We are saying here that the woman with regard to her ksuba and the lender with regard to the debt owed to him, they can't just go and collect straight out from the Beis HaMikdash, the sanctified funds. Rather, the Bailim is supposed to redeem them at a nominal rate. What we call bezoil, with just even a small coin as an act of redemption. And he does that with the intent of redeeming the properties. Now, the reason for this, why he doesn't need to offer a full rate of redemption, in other words, an amount of money that corresponds to the value of the property, that's because, in truth, the Hekdish really wasn't chal. And because of this concept of Ein Adam Makdish Dover She'enu Shelo. The Mishnah continues, Hiddish Tishim Mona V'hoya Choyvoy Mea Mona. A person dedicated property worth 90 Mona. And the prior Chov was worth 100 Mona. In other words, the prior chov was greater than the amount of property that this man had, that the borrower had. Moisef oid dinar upoide es hanechosim ho'elu. Almanas litain la ishek subasa ubal choiv es choivoi. Now, the expression here of Moisif oidina upoide, there's Tosfos presents Rashi's explanation and then he presents his own. So if we look in the Tosfos, the third Tosfos on the page, under the little number 2 that we find there, Lochein nira lefarish shehaloiva Yosef lahalvois oidinar. The point here is that the borrower shall borrow one more dinar, upoide hanechosim ho'elu, and then he will redeem these properties. The borrower is the one who also had sanctified his properties, and he'll redeem those properties. Kidei litein leishik subosel b'alchov chovo. Once again, we should bear in mind that we're talking about a situation where these debts, the ksuba and the chov, the loaned money, the borrowed money, existed, these debts existed before he was ever makdish his property. So the last point we read about was someone who was makdish property, or his holdings were worth 90, when the chov was actually worth 100, the pre-existing chov. The Gemara, Lomo li lemeimar hapoide poide, which in other words is, what is there any need for redemption of the properties in this case, when, after all, we had a rule that ein odem makdish davar she'eino shelo. This man really shouldn't have attempted to sanctify his properties in the first place. They weren't really his. They were in lien to the Balchov and to the Ksuba. So what's the need of the pidyon, of the redemption? Mishum de Rabbi Avo. The Gemara answers, because of Rabbi Avo's teaching, Yom Rabbi Avo, Shelo Yomru, Hekdish Yotze Below Pidyon. It's more of a public image situation, so that the public doesn't think that property can leave Hekdish without any form of redemption, so as to make it clear to the public that properties that leave Hegdish need to be redeemed. So here, even though here, it's not a function of needing to be redeemed, it doesn't really need to be redeemed in the first place, but because of the way it's viewed by the public, we have this nominal redemption that takes place. Masnisen delo karamun Shimon ben Gamliel. The Gemara points out that our Mishnah is not in accordance with Shimon ben Gamliel, the Sanyo of Shimon ben Omer. Im hoya choivoy keneged hegdeshoi poide, v'im lav eino poide. Rav Shmuel says that if the loan, the debt, the amount that was in debt, corresponds to the value of the properties that he was makdish. In other words, if we're talking about a person who was makdish all of his properties, so in such a case, we say that he is to redeem in order to pay off the creditor. V'im lav, eino pode. If you don't have this equality, this equal situation, then there is no redemption of properties from the Beis Hamikdash. Now, we'll look at the Rashi who explains this. Rashi im chovo keneged hegdesho poide, bedover muad kedamoran, the nominal redemption is paid, as we explained. The hashto iko lemeimar, here there is a need to go through this, because ki osfei meikara daito limigvei mehanach nichsi osfei. Since the loan corresponds to the value of his properties, it could be said that the lender intended to collect these properties in payment of the loan. And afterwards, he laid out a certain amount of money to the borrower, and that borrower had a property worth exactly that amount. So then we can say, under those circumstances, the Malva intended to get those properties. V'i lav, Rashi goes on, d'choivoi yoyser mehegdeshoi, that the original loan was worth more than the properties that were sanctified. Lav adaito dahani nichsi osfe, then we can say that the lender loaned the money
not having these properties in mind. After all, the chov, the value, was more than the value of the property. So the value of the property that eventually was sanctified wouldn't have covered the loan anyway. So the lender loaned the money without expectation of collecting from his properties. Elo hamune hamne. He believed, he trusted the lender, the borrower, of coming up with the debt, with the payment when needed. Hilkach lo govi mehekdish. Therefore, the lender in such a case isn't going to collect from those hekdish properties. Turning back to the Gemara, so we said that our Mishnah, which doesn't make this distinction, is therefore not like Rav Shimon Gamliel. V'rabbonan ad kamo, the Rabbonan who said that collection will be made from the sanctified properties, the lender who preceded the Hekdish will collect from these properties even if there is a discrepancy in value. In other words, where even where the value of the loan was greater than the property sanctified, the Gemara says, ad kama, up to what point can we say that this that the discrepancy will not prevent the lender from collecting those properties? So, Omar Ahuna Bar Yehuda, Omar Av Sheshes, Afilu Pochos Mechatz, it was ad palga, but it means up till a 100% differential, namely, if up till the point that the properties are worth half of the amount extended as a loan. Even in such a case, it's explained that the lender did have those properties in mind. You'll say, ah, but the loan was worth 100 when the properties are worth only 50. Well, the Shita, it's explained in the Rabbeinu Gershom explains that there are people who are, I should say, the Shita Mekubetzis, and not the Rabbeinu Gershom, in Ois Chof Aleph, points out that there are people that are wealthy, that are willing to pay twice as much as the property's value and still accept such a thing. So in our case, where the lender was such a man, he would look at property that worth even half the amount of the loan, but still have his eyes on that property. Therefore, under such circumstances, the Rabbanan would say, the lender can collect from Hekdish. The Mishnah. Afal pi sh'amru chayvei erechin mimashkinin oisoi. Even though we've said that a person who has an erechin debt, the gizbar of the Beis HaMikdash, can come and collect from him, take collateral from the vower in order to motivate the fellow to pay up his erech donation. Noisnin loy mozon shloshim yoyim. We nevertheless leave with the vower an amount of money to buy a month's worth of food, uksus shneim osur chodesh, and enough money to buy clothing for a year. What else do we leave with him? Mita mutsas, a bed with bedding, sandolov, shoes, utfilov, lo, aval lo, the ishto ulavonov. We make these provisions only with regard to the person himself who took the vow. However, we're not going to leave with him enough money to provide for his wife and children, so that if a person took a vow of erechin, to pay erechin, the gizbor will take from him as much as is needed to fulfill the vow. However, he won't take what was just enumerated. But if it's a matter of providing for the man's wife and children, no, the erechin takes precedence. Im hoya uman noisen lo shnei kli umanus mikol min umin. If the vower happened to be a craftsman, an artisan, so we leave with him vessels that he needs for his trade. Two of each vessel. Chorosh, a carpenter, nosin lo shnei Metzadin, Ushne Megeris. These are carpenter's tools. We leave him with two. In other words, a tool and a backup, a replacement for it if anything happens. Whereas all of these are points that even though we will move in and collect from a vow taker in order to pay off the vow, not so if it means taking these things from him. Rabbi Elezer Omer, im hoya iker, if he was a farmer, no same lo tsindo, we leave with him a pair of oxen. Chamor, no same lo chamoro, if he is a donkey driver, we leave him with his donkey. Hoya lo min echod ruba u min echod, what? Let us say we have an artisan that made a vow of erechin, and he has a different number of vessels. But one vessel he has a lot of, and the other he has only one of. Ein omrim lo limkor es hamruba velikach min hamuot. We don't say to him, sell off some of the extra vessels that he had a large quantity of, and buy one more of the minimum type vessel that he had. Ela noisnim lo shnei minim min hamruba. We leave with him two vessels from those that he had many of. The chol shiyesh lo min hamuot, and if he had one of the other kind of vessel, then we leave him with the one. And we don't make an allowance for him to buy an extra one. Rashi says the chol shiyesh lo min hamuot kamo shiyesh lo v'lo zavnino le achriti. We don't allow him to buy an extra one of that which he had mu'at of. Just like he was able to survive and support himself with a mu'at, a small amount of that whatever vessel we're talking about, he can continues living like that. Hamaktish nechosov malin loy tfilov. A person who was maktish his property, we say that you have to evaluate the value of your tefillin and give that money to the Beis HaMikdash, or you could say in other terms, in dedicating his property to the Beis HaMikdash, that included his tefillin, and he'll have to redeem his tefillin from the Beis HaMikdash. My taimo, the Gemara asks, why is it that we make this provision to the vow taker, that this the things mentioned in the Mishnah, that we leave these with him? The Omar Kra, now we turn to the top of Chof Dalet, the top line, the Pasuk says, V'im mochu me'erkecho, hachyehu me'erkecho. The word hu in this Pasuk is darshaned as hachyehu, means ensure his continued living, his continued existence. Avolo le'ishto uvonov, but the Beis HaMikdash will not leave enough funds for him to provide for his wife and kids. My taima, why is that? Who me'erkecha, the Pasuk says. Pasuk has a limitation expression, meaning him, the vower, velo ishto uvonav me'erkecha, but not to take, we don't take into consideration his wife and children. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.